When was the last time you saw genuinely new evidence in a debate this old? I mean it, like the question of whether there were early bishops of Rome, early popes, has been argued for over 500 years. Catholics, Protestants, atheists, historians, you name it, everyone has staked out their position. Everyone thinks they know what the evidence is. So when I found a recently published Substack article, I was very surprised to find evidence I'd never seen before. In this field, new evidence is really hard to come by. But this is different. Okay, this is a piece of evidence that's been sitting in the early Christian sources the whole time in plain sight that, as far as my friend can tell, no recent apologist and no scholar over the last 120 years or so has ever responded to. And once you see it, the entire debate around the papacy changes shape. Okay, before I show you this new evidence, I have to set the table because if you don't understand the shape of the existing debate, you won't see why this is such a big deal. All right, here's the situation. There's a Christian writer named Irenaeus. You may have heard of him before. He's the Bishop of Lyon. That's in modern France. And he's writing around AD 180. Irenaeus is one of our most important early sources for what early Christians believed because he was personally taught by Polycarp, who was personally taught by the apostle John. So Irenaeus is one handshake away from the apostles and two handshakes away from Jesus. But here's the part that a lot of people miss. Okay, when Irenaeus was writing his book Against Heresies, he's not writing like this a textbook about history. He's writing a polemic. He's fighting against a bunch of second century heretics, Gnostics mostly, who are claiming that they've got secret apostolic teachings, sort of hidden traditions, stuff Jesus told the apostles in private that the rest of the church doesn't know about. And Irenaeus' response is very interesting and brilliant. He says, okay, you say you have this apostolic teaching, prove it. Show me the succession, because the apostles appointed bishops in the churches that they founded, and those churches appointed their successors. And you can trace the line all the way down to today. That's where real apostolic teaching lives, out in the open, in the public succession of bishops, not in your secret club. And then, to make his point, Irenaeus picks the Church of Rome as his one example. He says Peter and Paul founded the Roman Church. They appointed Linus as bishop. After Linus came Anacletus, then Clement, then Evaristus, Alexander, Sixtus, Telesphorus, Hyginus, Pius, Anicetus, Soter, and finally, Eleutherus, who was the bishop of Rome when Irenaeus was actually writing. And fun fact, Irenaeus actually personally delivered a letter to Eleutherus. So 12 bishops in a row named in order going back to the apostles. And remember, he's making this argument against opponents. He's like saying, go check. Just like me, you can unroll the church records and see the names for yourself. So if this list were fake, the Gnostic opponents would have torn him apart for it, right? Irenaeus is staking his case on the bishop's list being public, verifiable, common knowledge. You would think on that basis alone, this would settle the whole question about early popes in Rome, but you'd be wrong. Or at least not everyone sees it that way. Because for the last 100 years or so, a school of liberal scholarship has argued that Irenaeus is just making all of this up. Now, they don't say he's doing this maliciously. They just think he's sort of projecting his ideas backward. They think the office of Bishop of Rome, meaning one guy in charge of the Roman Church, didn't actually exist until well into the second century. And Irenaeus was sort of retroactively assigning bishop status to people who in their lifetimes were just regular elders in a group of elders. But now here's where it gets interesting, because Protestant apologists love this view. Right? And the way that they sell it is by saying Catholic scholars agree with us. They'll quote a guy like Eamon Duffy. Duffy is a Cambridge professor, a fellow of the British Academy. And yes, he does identify as Catholic. In his book, Saints and Sinners, Duffy writes, and apologists love quoting this, that all the indications are that there was no single bishop in Rome for almost a century after the apostles died. So the Protestant apologists will go see, even their own scholars admit this. But I want you to notice the move that's happening here, because it's a move that you see all the time in apologetics debates. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. When a Protestant apologist says Catholic scholars agree with us, what they actually mean almost every time is that liberal Catholic scholars who reject the church's actual teaching agree with us. Eamon Duffy holds positions that are flatly contradictory to the First Vatican Council's teachings on the papacy. He is, on this question, heterodox. He is not a representative of Catholic teaching. He's a Cambridge academic who happens to have been raised Catholic and apparently identifies as Catholic. Like, imagine the reverse for a second, okay? Imagine Bart Ehrman comes along and says, Protestant scholars agree with my view on the empty tomb. And then you find out he's actually quoting a guy named Rudolf Bultmann. He's a German Lutheran New Testament scholar who denied the empty tomb. No Protestant apologists would let Bart Ehrman, an agnostic, get away with that move. They'd say, hold on a second, you don't get to cite the most theologically liberal guy in the room and then pretend that he speaks for us. But that's exactly the move that's being made when Protestant apologists cite Duffy and other people like him against the early papacy. They're citing scholars whose views are already incompatible with the traditional Catholic teaching. And they're not telling you that there are plenty of conservative Catholic scholars and conservative Protestant scholars, for that matter, who don't agree. So when you hear the line that even Catholic scholars admit there were no early bishops of Rome, what's actually being said is that liberal scholars who happen to identify as Catholic admit this. That's a very different claim, and it doesn't get you what the apologist wants it to get you. Okay, now having said all that rant over, let's actually look at the evidence, because even setting aside this like bait and switch, the question of whether there were early bishops of Rome is a historical question. It's not about who holds this view. So let's see if it's true that all the indications point one way, because if even one indication points the other way, the case is overstated. And as we're about to see, there's a lot more than just one. Now, before we get to the new evidence, the positive evidence, I want to flag something super important about the case from Protestants. The standard Protestant case against bishops of Rome here is built almost entirely on what we might call an argument from silence. What does that mean? Well, it means that there were a few early Christian sources, Clement's letter to the Corinthians, Ignatius's letter to the Romans, the Shepherd of Hermas, that don't mention a single monarchical bishop in Rome. And the Protestant scholars, Protestant apologists say, aha, that silence is super meaningful. If there had been a bishop, surely they would have mentioned one. Now, I've already done work on this elsewhere. I have a whole video where I respond to Gavin Ortlund, one of the most thoughtful Protestant apologists working today, and I show that the specific arguments from silence in this debate are just extremely weak. They don't pass the bar. I draw on a great paper by the philosopher Tim McGrew, who's a Protestant, by the way, about what makes arguments from silence good or bad in general, and then I apply that framework to the silence that Protestant apologists keep pointing to in these early Christian letters. I'll link to that video below. But I'm not going to relitigate all of that here. For now, just take this as the headline. The standard negative case against early bishops of Rome, the case that's based on what early sources don't say, has serious problems. But here's what's been missing from this debate. Okay, even if you set aside how weak the silence arguments are, which they are super weak, even if you grant them everything that they want here, the Catholic side has been mostly defending Irenaeus's list that we talked about earlier. We've been saying, look, Irenaeus is reliable. Here's why you should trust him. That's a sort of defensive posture. But what if there's a positive argument that doesn't depend on some list of bishops at all? An argument that scholars and apologists haven't responded to because they haven't even noticed it. That's what my friend found. Let's get into it. So real quick, before we do, channel members get early access to videos just like this one days before they go public. It's a great way to support the channel and the work that I'm doing here. Okay, to explain this, I'm going to start with something completely modern, and then I'm going to rewind 2,000 years. Imagine you ask me when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and I say something like, it happened when JFK was president. Pause on that for a second, because I just told you something, and I told you something more than I actually realized. I told you when the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, sure, but the way that I told you presupposes a whole bunch of interesting stuff. It presupposes that you know that there was such a person as JFK. It presupposes that you know roughly when he was president. And most importantly, it presupposes that the institution of the American presidency was real and well known. If the presidency had only existed for a couple of years, or it was some new institution most people have never heard of, an answer like that to your question would be completely useless to you. You would just like stare at me and wonder what I was talking about. Now, imagine an alien historian 1,000 years from now digging up ancient American documents. They find many letters where Americans casually date events by saying when so-and-so was president. Even if every official record of the American government were lost, the alien historian could conclude just from the way that people talked that the presidency was a real, established, highly important, and widely recognized institution because that's how people used it. All right, if you've got that, hold on to it. Now we're going to go to second century Christianity. So here's what my friend on Substack noticed. Okay, in the second century, Christians had a habit, call it a custom, of dating events by reference to bishops of Rome. Not to prove that the bishops existed, they weren't trying to make some point about that. They were just using bishops the way that we use American presidents as a casual way to tell their readers when something happened. And here's the thing, some of these references are to bishops who, according to the Protestant scholars, should not have existed yet. So let me give you the 5 clearest examples. Example 1, there's a document called the Muratorian Fragment. And quick fun fact about this one, that name has nothing to do with anything in the document. It's named after Ludovico Antonio Muratori, an 18th century Italian librarian who pulled it out of a manuscript in Milan in the 1700s. Imagine like a 21st century document being called the Bertuzzi Fragment because I was the one that happened to find it. Anyways, it's our oldest known list of New Testament books written around AD 160, and in it, the author casually dates the Shepherd of Hermas, that's another early Christian text, by saying that it was written very recently in our times while Bishop Pius, his brother, was occupying the chair of the Church of Rome. Pius was Bishop of Rome from about 140 to 154. The author of the Muratorian Fragment isn't trying to prove that Pius existed with this line. He's just telling you when Hermas wrote his book by reference to Pius, the way that I tell you about something that happened when Obama was president. Example 2, Irenaeus, the Lyon guy. Remember our one handshake away from the apostles guy. He mentions a heretic named Cerdo, and he says Cerdo settled in Rome in the time of Hyginus. Hyginus was bishop of Rome around 138 to 142. Again, Irenaeus isn't trying to like pause here to argue whether or not there were bishops. He's just telling you when Cerdo showed up. Example 3, same Irenaeus, he says of another heretic named Valentinus, quote, Valentinus came to Rome in the time of Hyginus, flourished under Pius, and remained until Anicetus. That's 3 bishops in a single sentence used as timestamps, like saying somebody's career ran from Bush through Obama into Trump. Example 4, Tertullian, he's a fiery North African writer from Carthage around AD 200, the guy who basically invents Latin theology. Tertullian dates the conversion of certain heretics to, quote, the Roman Church under the episcopate of the blessed Eleutherus. Same move, bishop as a timestamp. Example 5, and here's the one that really ought to like settle all of this. Irenaeus, remember the same guy, same book. He also dates an event by reference to Clement. He says, quote, in the time of this Clement, no small dissension having occurred among the brethren at Corinth, the church in Rome dispatched a most powerful letter to the Corinthians. That's the famous letter that we now call First Clement. And Clement of Rome was bishop in the first century, somewhere around AD 88 to 99. So Irenaeus isn't just casually using bishops as timestamps in the 130s and 140s. He's doing it for the 90s, the first century, decades before the Protestant scholars say there were any monarchical bishops of Rome at all. Now, I want you to notice something, okay? These are authors in 3 completely different parts of the Roman Empire. Rome itself for the Muratorian Fragment, Lyon in modern France for Irenaeus, Carthage in modern Tunisia for Tertullian. They're not coordinating with each other, okay? And they're all doing somehow the same thing. They're dating events by Roman bishops the way that we date events by presidents. Now, here's the payoff of all of this in this video, and I really want this to land because I don't think people have really appreciated how strong of an argument this actually is. Let me walk through it in 3 steps. Step 1, when the Muratorian Fragment dates Hermas by Bishop Pius, the author is not arguing, okay, he's not arguing that Pius existed. He's not making a case for it. He's assuming that his readers already knew who Pius was, that Pius was Bishop of Rome and roughly when. He's taking it all for granted. And that's a much stronger kind of evidence than someone making a positive claim, because when someone makes a claim, you can question whether or not they were making it up. But when someone takes something for granted in front of an audience, they can't be making it up because the audience would catch them. Step two, now think about who the audience is. Okay, the Muratorian fragment is from around, like I said, AD 160. Pius was bishop in the 140s and the 150s. So the audience reading this in the 160s includes people who lived through Pius's time. They were there. Adults reading the fragment in AD 180 would remember when Hyginus was bishop in the 130s. An 80-year-old reading Irenaeus would remember Telesphorus, who was bishop in the 120s. If the Protestant story were right, here, if monarchical bishops in Rome only emerged in the late 2nd century or maybe even later, those readers would know all of this, okay? They would read the Muratorian fragment, hit the line while Bishop Pius was occupying the chair of the Church of Rome, and go, what? Like, I was there. Pius wasn't a bishop. He was just one of the elders. There was no chair. The custom simply can't survive that. You cannot establish a casual throwaway custom of dating events by an institution that the people reading you know didn't exist a generation ago. It's like me trying to date events by saying when so-and-so was Queen of America. Like, you would laugh, right? You would correct me and the custom of my dating method would die immediately. Step three, and this is the part that like just really seals all of this. This isn't just one author doing this. Okay, this is multiple authors in completely different parts of the Christian world. Rome, Lyon, Carthage, all doing the same thing independently. And that tells you this isn't just like one random Christian's quirk. It's a settled habit across the early Christian world. It's just the way that they talked. And that means the institution behind the habit had to be real, had to be well known, and it had to be old enough for that habit to have formed in the first place. So put all of this together, by the late 2nd century, multiple Christian writers in different cities are taking it for granted that bishops of Rome existed in the early 2nd century, back to Pius, back to Hyginus, back to Telesphorus and Sixtus. They're taking it for granted in front of audiences who would have remembered whether it was true, and they're doing it independently of each other. That's a kind of evidence that's almost impossible to fake. Okay, but this also tells us something very interesting, something very important about the Roman line of bishops. If it was so well known throughout the Christian world that multiple independent Christian writers assumed their audience knew about it and dated events to that particular line, like, why did they know the Roman line of bishops? Why did people know about that? Think about it. When we date events by reference to American presidents, that tells us something important about American presidents, right? It tells us that American presidents are some of the most important figures of our time. The same is true of Roman bishops. They were some of, if not the, most important bishops. Interesting. Now, can somebody push back? Maybe, sure. They might say, maybe these guys were just presbyters, not bishops in the full sense. But the Anglican scholar, J.B. Lightfoot, he's the gold standard for early church scholarship in his era, and he's not Catholic. Lightfoot pointed out that the Muratorian fragment doesn't just call Pius an elder. It says he was occupying the chair of the Roman church, and that chair is governance language. It's the language you use for someone who governs, right? Not someone who's like one voice among many. Now, let me be very honest about what this argument does and what it doesn't do, because I want to give you something that's absolutely airtight that you can share with other people. This argument does not by itself prove papal infallibility. It doesn't prove the universal jurisdiction of the Pope. Those are much bigger conversations. But here's what it does do. This isn't some weak piece of evidence, okay? This isn't just like one indication among many. The kind of evidence that we have here, a public custom in front of audiences in within living memory, repeated independently by authors in three different parts of the Roman world, is among the strongest kinds of historical evidence we ever get for an ancient institution. Historians only dream of evidence like this. When you can show that a practice was so embedded in culture that authors used it casually, in passing, in front of audience who could check it, you have basically locked in the existence of the institution behind the practice. So when Protestant apologists confidently quote heterodox Catholic scholars to say that there's no evidence of a monarchical bishop in Rome until the late 2nd century, they're not just wrong here, okay? About there being some evidence, which there is some evidence from these lists from Irenaeus and stuff, but they're wrong in a much bigger way, okay? There's very, very strong evidence that goes the other way in the favor of Catholics. And as far as I can tell, as far as my friend can tell, they have not engaged with this. If somebody out there has responded to this and we just haven't found it yet, drop a link in the comments. I genuinely want to know. But until that response shows up, the conclusion here stands. The early bishops of Rome were real. The early Christians knew about it. And the case against them rests on silence that this evidence absolutely completely blows out of the water. By the way, this video is based on a Substack article by my friend who writes under the name Ecclesia Antiqua. Over there, I'll link it below. He's working on a whole series going through the historical evidence for early bishops of Rome piece by piece. And this was just part one. Okay, he cites even more examples than I've gone through in this video, and there's way more evidence coming. I think he's got some of the best historical work I've seen on this question, and I would highly encourage you to go subscribe to him directly. Oh, and by the way, Catholicism is true.